Welcome to Wall Street Unspun with your host, Peter Schiff.
But it's a giant bubble in search of a pin, and it's going to find
one. Are you confused with the ups and downs of the economy and what it means to you?
Don't believe the propaganda, and that's what it is. When you're listening to an analyst on a lot of these popular financial shows, you're not getting investment advice. You're getting propaganda.
Get ready to misinformation provided by the mainstream media.
These firms are trying to sell you stocks. Their real clients, their banking clients, are trying to get rid of stuff.
And now, here's your host of Wall Street Unspun, the president of Euro Pacific Capital and a licensed broker with a passion for truth. It's Wall Street Unspun with Peter Schiff.
Hi, everybody. It is Peter Schiff live again for another episode of Wall Street Unspun, midweek market update. I've now done the show two consecutive Wednesdays in a row. It's been a while since I have been able to accomplish that feat. Anyway, you are listening live on my website, www.europac.net, and on shortwave radio, I think it's 5.07 megahertz. And, of course, we do archive the show on our website, and you can listen to it, I think, podcasts, I think that's what they call it. I do need to apologize, though. I know it is taking a lot longer to get these websites, these radio shows, up on the website, and I apologize for that. I keep pushing, but it all is compliance-related. The FINRA rules and regulations are getting more and more complicated, that it just slows down the works, you know, even though we have dramatically increased our compliance department. I think I have 8 people that work in the compliance department, complying with a myriad of rules and regulations that I'm sure are going to get even more cumbersome and more expensive with new financial regulations that will be passed. So it is what is taking such a long time to get these websites. So it's important to try to listen live if you want to get the information in a timely manner. If you want to wait for it to be on the website, unfortunately, your government at work, and so it just gums up the works and takes a lot longer. Also, talking about my website, we are very close to launching a brand new website for Euro Pacific Capital. I'm not sure the exact day of the launch of that new website, but look for it. I'm excited that, it's been a long time since we've updated the website, and I know there's been a lot of advancement in internet technology. Since I first put this website up many years ago. So the new site will be coming soon, so make sure and check it out. Also, I know I've talked quite a bit on this show about Euro Pacific Precious Metals, and everybody is waiting for the debut of Euro Pacific Precious Metals. And I do think we are within 2 weeks of the new Euro Pacific Precious Metals company up and running. I would have loved to have already had it up and running, especially with all the news, regarding Gold Line and companies that overcharge for precious metals, because that's one thing that we are not going to do. I mean, one of the reasons that I decided to launch this company was because of the horror stories I've heard from so many people who have overpaid from coins or who have been talked into buying numismatics when they really wanted bullion. And so, that's not going to happen at my company. We're not even selling numismatics, so it's going to be impossible for somebody to lead people to buy numismatics when I don't even give the salesman the option to do that. So that company will be up and running. We'll send out an email when it is open for business. So be on the lookout for Euro Pacific Precious Metals. Also, if you haven't gotten a copy of my latest book, How an Economy Grows and Why It Crashes, make sure and pick up a copy. I'm really excited about this book. I want to make sure that as many people as possible read the book, because I think it's going to be very valuable in educating people as to, the problems in this country and what the real source of those problems and the solutions. If you go to Amazon.com, you can look at the reviews. So far, there's of the reviews, of the 68 reviews, 61 of them are 5 stars, 2 or 4 stars. There's a couple people that don't like it. There's 3 1-star reviews and 1 2-star review. In fact, I just noticed a 1-star review, and I thought I'd I speak about it. Maybe if this guy is listening to the show and he wants to call me up, his name is David Upshaw, and I'd be happy to have a debate with David about some of the problems he had with my book. You know, one of them, he is upset that I think that default is better than inflation when it comes to the debt. And I still believe that. And when I talk about defaulting on the debt, I'm talking about defaulting as opposed to inflating, which is default disguised. And, of course, when I talk about legitimate default, I'm not talking about where the United States government pays nothing. I'm talking about a restructuring where we reduce the value of the debt. We make a change so that we can pay it back because we have borrowed much too much money. There's no way we're going to pay it back. The plan is to inflate. The plan is to print. But my point in the book is that that's worse, that giving your creditors back money of diminished value is actually worse than giving them back less money of comparable value. Because, and also the spillover effect, when you inflate your way out of debt, you punish people that don't even hold the debt. That is the problem. But one thing I want to take issue with, and I'd love to have this gentleman, Upshaw, give me a call. He said his biggest problem with my book is that I think deflation or falling prices, he defines it as falling prices, that the biggest problem he has with my book is that I think falling prices are a good thing. And I'll quote from his review as to why he thinks falling prices are so bad. Here's what he says. Why should anyone make a major purchase that would be cheaper next month? In the meantime, while we wait, production slows. This causes layoffs. So what this guy is arguing is that if prices were falling, nobody would make a major purchase because they would just wait. See, that is the classical argument why falling prices are bad. But it's wrong. It doesn't, in fact, it has no validity in actual experience. First of all, why talk about major purchases? What about minor purchases like food or energy, right? Would it be a bad thing if food prices were falling over time so that it was cheaper to eat? I mean, would somebody say, well, I'm not going to eat this week. I'm going to wait until next week when the food is cheaper and buy it then. No, you're going to buy the food as you need it. But if it gets cheaper over time, well, that's just a good thing because now you can spend more money on something else because eating isn't as expensive or you can buy better food. Falling food prices wouldn't be a bad thing. What about bigger ticket things? What about education? What if education costs were falling? What if college degrees were getting cheaper every year? Would students say, you know, I just turned 18 and I'd like to start college, but, you know, I think the tuition is going to go down next year, so I'll just hold off and do nothing for another year and I'll start college when I'm 19. And then when they're 19, are they going to say, you know, I don't want to go. I mean, if I just wait another year, the tuition will be even cheaper, so I'm not going to go. Of course not. You're going to go to college as soon as you're ready. You're going to want to go, even if it's cheaper in the future. You don't want to wait. You want to get that degree. You want to get out in the workforce. But what about big ticket items, like he's talking about major purchases? I would consider a computer a major purchase. Computer prices fall over time. Yet it doesn't stop people from buying them, even though they know everybody buying a computer knows if they just wait a few months, they could probably get it cheaper. That doesn't stop them from buying. Cell phones are the same way. Plasma TVs are the same way. I mean, every plasma TV I own can be bought cheaper today. That doesn't stop me from buying them. The whole idea that people would stop buying because prices are falling is just flat out wrong. It just doesn't happen. Now, are there circumstances where people don't buy things because the price is too high and they wait for them to fall? Of course, when they can't afford it. I didn't buy a plasma TV when it was $10,000. Somebody did. I didn't. I waited for the price to come down because I didn't want to pay $10,000. If plasma TVs started out at $10,000 a piece and just kept getting more expensive, which apparently this guy Upshaw would have thought would have been better, I never would have bought one. Most people wouldn't own one. The only reason that so many people own plasma TVs is because the price went down. Now, he points out that most economists disagree. Almost all economists agree that deflation is bad. Yes, that's true. Almost all economists agree, and almost all economists are wrong. I mean, the fact that anybody can think that a falling standard of living is a bad thing. A falling cost of living, rather, is a bad thing. And that it's a good thing if things get more expensive, if prices go up. It is complete and utter absurdity. And that is one of the points that my book is trying to point out. Yet this person is still so brainwashed to believe that white is black and black is white. When he sees it in such a simplistic form, he still can't figure it out. But I think the book does an excellent job. I'm sure there's somebody out there, maybe they can call this show, that might have been under the illusion that falling prices were a bad thing. And maybe when they saw it in this cartoon, they realized, my gosh, I was wrong. Of course, it's not a bad thing. Now, why do the politicians want us to believe that falling prices are bad? So they can create inflation to save us. So it's a justification for the politicians to print money and create inflation. Anyway, so if we get this guy on the line, you know, if anybody can figure out, or if anybody else who believes that falling prices are bad, that the economy would collapse, that everybody would lose their jobs, that no one would produce if prices were falling, please call up, because nobody has ever been able to make a convincing argument in my presence that falling prices are bad. I know a lot of people believe it, but I've never heard one argument for it that makes even the slightest bit of sense. Now, one thing I want to talk a little bit, you know, going back, the markets have been very volatile the last few days, big swings up, down, hour, violent sell-off yesterday, huge rally today. I don't know if this is the market putting in a bottom or getting ready for another big move down. I mean, my gut feeling would be that this activity, this movement is indicative of a bottom and that the market is probably going to head higher. I think that is more likely given looking at the charts, looking at the longer term trends right now, than that we're about to collapse and break for new lows. I mean, it doesn't mean that that can't happen. And I am not trying to be a short-term market timer, but I believe that, you know, sentiment has risen rather spectacularly negative in the market. We have certainly worked off the fact that there was so much optimism on the market. I think that there still is a lot of optimism on the economy, although more and more people are now looking at this double dip scenario. Now, as you know, I think that all the optimism on the economy is misplaced. The economy is a mess. But that doesn't mean the stock market can't go up. In fact, I believe that because the economy is so messed up, that the government keeps printing money, and the result of that is that money loses value, and so stock prices have to rise to reflect the loss of the value of the money in which they're being priced. And so this is an inflationary rally. And my expectation is that that rally will continue. I just think that the gains will be far better abroad than they will in the United States. And I do believe that, you know, if this is a bottoming process in the stock market, that we're also having a topping process in the dollar. You know, the dollar index has been rising. We're still well above the 80 level in the dollar index. We're, what, about 87 right now. But I think the cash index is below 80, like 86.70. But if the market rolls over, I expect the dollar to roll over as well. And I expect gold, my guess is that gold will continue its strength. I mean, the chart on gold looks very, very good. So it's my anticipation that whichever way the market breaks, up or down, almost whichever way the dollar breaks, up or down, my anticipation is that gold will continue to be strong. Now, you know, one of the things that's happened recently, of course, that I think is a great trading opportunity, is happening in the energy sector, in the oil market. We had this horrific accident at British Petroleum in their deep water well, and the result of that, apart from the tremendous environmental impact and the impact on other industries, such as the fishing industries in the Gulf of Mexico, Barack Obama has called a moratorium, right? There's a six-month moratorium on deep water drilling. Now, in a normal market environment, this spill and this moratorium, I think oil prices would be heading straight up. I think we'd be over $100 a barrel. The reason that it's not happening, I think, is because the bigger picture right now is this collapse of the European economy, worries about global recession, this temporary strength in the dollar. I think all these factors are temporarily keeping the oil market, you know, in check. But if I'm right on the market potentially bottoming out here, dollar topping out, I would expect a huge move up in the price of oil. You know, this oil moratorium on drilling is going to have severe consequences for the U.S. economy, because this is oil that we theoretically might have produced ourselves, which we're now going to have to import. And, of course, the supply of oil is diminished not only by the oil lost to the spill, but by the oil that's not going to be drilled as a result of the moratorium. And you have to remember that one of the reasons, the main reason, that we're out there drilling in such deep water is because government regulations make it difficult to drill in shallow water, which is closer to shore, because of the environmental impact. People don't want to look at oil rigs. So you have to put them so far offshore that nobody can see them. But now you're drilling in deep water, and, of course, that's a lot more expensive and a lot riskier, as we saw with this explosion. Also, we can't drill in government lands. We're not drilling up in Anwar, Alaska, again, environmental reasons. And so because of all this, we're now forced to drill in deep water, and now we have another environmental problem because of the spill. But if we were drilling up in Alaska, where I don't think the environmental impact is a big deal, it would be a lot better. But what's going to be the result of this moratorium? Well, you know, it's a six-month moratorium, but what's going to happen is all this drilling equipment, right, all these companies that own the rigs that can drill in the deep water, they're not going to sit around for 6 months waiting for the end of this moratorium. They're going to have to put that equipment into use someplace else in the world, right, someplace that it's not. There's a finite amount of this equipment. And when they move this drilling equipment, you know, they're going to put it into projects, right? These projects could last a year, 2 years, 3 years. So by the time this moratorium is lifted, it's not like there's going to be a bunch of rigs ready to, you know, come into operation. They're not going to be here. They're going to be committed someplace else. How much is it going to cost to get some of these rigs back into production? This is going to be a major drag on U.S. Oil production. It is going to obviously hurt, you know, employment, and that people that used to be employed Americans on these rigs are now going to be unemployed, and the people working on the rigs are going to be in other countries where the drilling is taking place. And so now we're going to be importing the oil we used to produce ourselves. It's going to run up our trade deficit. You know, the impact of this, you know, is temporarily being masked by some of the rumblings in the global economy. But we're going to see the true extent of this beyond the loss of life or beyond you know, the environmental problems. Just the cost of energy, the cost of gasoline in this country is going to be a lot higher because, not only because of the spill, but because of the reaction and the aftermath of the spill. And I'm sure as a result of this, you know, insurance costs are going to go up for drilling eventually when they resume it. And of course, that's going to increase the cost of oil production, increase the cost to consumers. So, you know, this should be a big increase. That's my guess. And so I think some of these oil stocks that have been beaten down, you know, I think they're probably really, really good buys here, as is crude itself. I mean, I, of course, you know, for the FINRA compliance, you know, this is all, you know, my opinion. You know, I could be completely wrong. Maybe oil prices are going to keep falling. Maybe oil stocks are going to fall. But if you wanted to bet on something, you know, that's what I think. I mean, I think it's a good risk reward. I think it's pretty clear to me that oil prices are going a lot higher for a number of reasons, particularly if I'm right about the dollar resuming its descent. And I know I've been negative on the dollar, you know, for a long time, and here recently the dollar has rallied. But again, as I said before, I don't think this is indicative of dollar strength more than it is euro weakness, and the dollar is kind of winning, you know, this beauty contest by default here as being the uglier of the two currencies. And some of the other currencies have been falling too, but not nearly as much as the euro. But as I said many times, once the euro finds a new relative valuation based on the mistakes that Europe is making with respect to the bailouts, that I do expect both the dollar and the euro to continue to decline in value, although I expect the dollar to decline even faster than the euro, because I think our problems are far more advanced than are the problems in Europe. And I think that what is happening in Europe is going to pave the way for bigger problems for the euro in the long run. But in the short run, between the two currencies, the dollar is the most endangered, and I think that is the currency most likely to collapse, not the euro. Anyway, let me go to the phones. I'm sure we've got a bunch of calls holding on. Maybe somebody who wants to argue the case for rising prices and defend the critic of how an economy grows and why it crashes, who gave it a one-star review. Anyway, first up is going to be Ellen in New York. Go ahead, Ellen.
Just real quickly, I know you just said a moment ago that you think the euro will halt. I think in the long run, the dollar would collapse before the euro. And yet there's still this mentality in the market that whenever there's a huge stock sell-off, they run back into the dollar. I mean,
well, that's, yeah, I mean, they've been doing that kind of like Pavlov's dog, you know, and there's a perception that the dollar is safe, and that trade is going to work until it stops working. And when it stops working, it's really going to stop. And, you know, when I say the euro might break apart. I mean, there are rumors that Greece might leave the euro. But that, I think, might be good for the euro. You see, we don't own Greek stocks. We own German stocks.
Right.
We own Dutch stocks. We own some French stock. We own stocks in the core countries that are part of the euro. We're not really, we don't own a lot of stocks, you know, in Italy. I'm not, you know, or, you know, in Portugal, we don't own any. In Greece, we don't own any. So, you know, it might actually be better for the countries that remain in the euro if some of these other countries drop out. We'll see.
No, I agree with you. I think they would have done themselves a favor not bailing Greece out in the first place. I agree with you.
Well, I was against that, and I was hoping, and I thought that they would not cave in. But, you know, the political pressures are very strong, and, you know, politicians seem to always do the wrong thing, which is one of the reasons I'm so negative on the U.S. economy, because I'm confident that they will constantly do the wrong thing. You know, I'm running for the United States Senate on the chance that if I'm in Washington, maybe I can convince them not to do the wrong thing. But even that is going to be a difficult task.
Yeah.
Even if I can win.
Yeah, they like to wait till crises. First they cause the crises, and then when the crisis exists, then they decide to go do something and they make it worse.
Exactly, and they blame somebody other than themselves on the crises.
Right.
And they usurp even more power to do even more things to create an even bigger crisis, which ultimately benefits them yet again because they can come to the rescue.
Yeah.
With another cure that makes the disease worse.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much, and I'm a supporter of your Senate race. I can't vote in Connecticut, but I send you money from New York.
Well, thank you for your donation, and I appreciate your business as a client and your patience during this transition from Pershing to NFS Fidelity. But, you know, we have gotten so many complaints over the years regarding Pershing that it is just something that was, you know, I was reluctant to do it because of the problems involved and the cost and the expense on our part of going through the conversion. But the platform at NFS is just so much better for the foreign business that we're doing, that it just seems like it was time to make the switch, especially before we get even bigger, you know, and open up even more offices, which I do have a lot of expansion plans ultimately. And in fact, the newest office is coming up, Euro-Pacific Canada, hopefully will be open for business in July. So for all you Canadians who have been patiently waiting for the opportunity to work with Euro-Pacific, you might not have to wait much longer. And, and I believe they're going to be clearing through Fidelity as well. So that's another reason to try to get both Euro-Pacific Canada and Euro-Pacific U.S. on the same platform. Pershing has no capabilities to clear for a Canadian firm, whereas Fidelity does. So that's another synergy there. But anyway, thanks very much, Alan, for your call and your donation. Next up, also from New York, is Joe.
Hello?
Hey, Joe. You're on the air with Peter Schiff.
Hi, I'm a contributor to your campaign also. I had two quick questions.
Well, appreciate it. Anybody else want to contribute at shiffforsenate.com? We are taking contributions, although as everybody knows, right now we are more focused on signatures. But if you're not a registered voter in Connecticut, you can't sign my petition, you can at least help support and pay for the people who are signing by making a donation.
I have two quick questions for you. If the dollar does collapse, how would that affect my 401k. I have a lot of my money in emerging markets. and I'm kind of limited on my choices. How would that affect
Yeah, well,
that?
I mean, if the dollar were to collapse in value, all else being equal, you know, the dollar value of your investments in emerging markets would rise sharply. Now, of course, all else isn't equal. How is a dollar collapse going to affect the global economy? How is it going to affect the particular stocks that you own? You know, without knowing what those stocks are, I don't know. But my feeling is that if the dollar collapses, the worst thing to own is the dollar, right? Because it's what's collapsing. And so almost anything is better than dollars. Now, of course, the absolute worst thing to own is dollar-denominated debt. Like if the dollar is collapsing, you don't want 30-year government bonds, because if the dollar is collapsing today, it's collapsing even faster if you have a promise to pay you dollars 30 years from now. So if you believe the dollar is going to collapse, you don't want dollars. You don't want bonds denominated in dollars. So you have to figure out what do you want to own. Now, if the dollar really collapses completely, probably the best thing to own, I guess, would be gold bullion. But you don't know when it's going to collapse or if it's going to collapse, so you can't only own gold bullion. And so what I've decided that I think makes the most sense is to have some gold bullion, but to also own assets, equities, outside of the United States that are not in dollars, that don't earn dollars, that are somewhat insulated as best you can from the U.S. economy. That's what I'm trying to do, you know, with the Asian stocks, with the emerging markets, with European stocks, with stocks in natural resource economies. I think that is the best defense when what you're worried about is a crash of the dollar. And that's what I'm worried about. There are some people that are just worried about deflation, that are worried about the dollar getting stronger and prices of stocks and assets collapsing. Well, I don't think there's really a chance of that happening, because the government won't let that happen, because they control the printing press. If we had real money, if we were still on the gold standard, then I would be saying, yes, don't buy stocks, don't buy assets. Keep your money, keep your cash, because your money would be gold. The government would not be able to print its way out of these problems. But because we are on a fiat system, and because you could print an endless amount of money, that is what I'm afraid is going to happen.
Would that make sense? In my 401k, I can't get that out. Can't do anything with it. But would you consider that to be outside of the dollar?
Yeah, I mean, if your 401k is invested in securities in foreign countries, if you can buy an emerging market fund, a gold fund, a natural resource fund, a foreign bond fund, those are the types of things that you should be looking at in your 401k if you believe the way I do. The only real risk that you might have is, well, what if the government actually seizes your 401k? What if they confiscate it for the good of the people? You know, what if they nationalize it? You know, these are the things that I have no control over. These are the things that I fear most, is because as the problems get worse, the government gets worse. That the things that they do, they act in a more draconian, in a more tyrannical fashion. And so those are the wild cards that I don't know.
That'd be one of the most dirty things they could do.
Yeah, I know, but you know, they keep upping the ante here on how dirty they get, and it's kind of like, you know, the camel's nose under the tent, or slowly boiling a frog in oil. They're slowly increasing the temperature of what they're doing. And if you're looking, like I mentioned on the last show, about how they're cracking down on Americans' ability to open up foreign accounts, because the brokerage firm I know offshore is transferring about 180 of their clients to me because they're Americans, and they're not allowed to do business with Americans anymore because of American law. So, you know, these are the things, slowly but surely, the government is taking away our rights and taking away our liberties and grabbing more power. And as the situation deteriorates, and I know that it will, in my opinion, based on what they're doing, as the recession gets worse, as unemployment gets worse, as inflation gets worse, and the government, there are more cries for the government to do something, even though what the government is doing is pouring gasoline on a fire, they're going to keep pouring it on. Yeah. And as they create more problems by taking away our rights and taking away our liberties.
I had another quick question for you. I saw your new blog today, and I when you were talking about the gold coins.
Uh-huh.
I was wondering, what would be considered a fair markup for silver coins, like silver eagles or silver maple leaves?
Well, you know, I don't really know, you know, what I can say from the research that I've done, and, you know, I'm starting the gold company now, that on bullion coins, right, which are Maple Leafs, Cougarans, you know, Philharmonics, Pandas, you know, the coins that are being minted now, right, that are bullion, typically those coins are going to be sold from the mint at a premium of maybe 2 or 3% over their melt value. And that's the cost of fabricating the coin. I mean, you have to make the coin. That costs something. And then the gold dealers will mark them up 1%, 2%, 3%. So if you're going to buy one of those types of coins, you might be paying 5, 6, 7% over the melt value of the coin. You know? And if you sell it back, you'll still probably get a small premium over melt value.
You're talking about gold?
Gold or silver. Same thing if you buy. I mean, silver coins are a little bit more expensive. I had my research that, you know, if you're going to buy, and the best way to buy silver, what we're going to be selling at Your Precious Metals is bigger, you know, like, you know, in 10 ounces or 50 ounces at a time. You really, you know, if you buy it in small denominations, small 1 ounce rounds, you're really increasing your costs. I mean, what I think you want to do when you're buying silver is I think you want to have a small quantity of small coins, like a junk silver. You can buy, you know, $1,000 a bag of silver, which is going to be dimes, nickels, and dimes, quarters, half dollars. This is silver that you would use for barter, right? If things really got bad and you have to buy things with your silver, you know, you want these small coins. But for the bulk of your holdings, you just want to store the metal, and you want to buy as much silver for your dollar as you can. And so you want to buy a bigger bar or a bigger round, you know, than just a coin. But, you know, you can also buy coins if you want to have some coins, you know, that are, you know, older coins that were not just minted today, that are, you know, old American coins that used to circulate when we had gold as money or in Europe. You can buy those coins. The premiums are not that high if you buy, you know, non-numismatic value. You know, these are coins that are circulated. You know, they're not rated or graded by an agency. You know, they're just common date circulated coins. You can buy those, and the premiums are higher. You know, I mean, the ones I talked about on this gold line, I called around and I found that you could buy these 20 franc French roosters. I found that they cost about 5% more than buying, you know, a Cougaran or a Maple Leaf. You know, so you're going to get a little less gold for your money. But if you want that 100-year-old coin just so you can, you know, have it, you know, you can do that. But, you know, they were selling these coins, you know, for a huge premium, better than a 50% premium, and that was just crazy. I mean, why would you pay that premium when there's a half a dozen at least firms that you can call at and buy the same coins and not pay that premium at all? But anyway, I recorded two videos on it. I did one yesterday, another one today on the subject. It's just in the news, and I'm also coming out with my own coin company. So I think it's important that rather than looking for new ways to regulate the coin industry, we just need to get this information out there, to educate the public, just make sure that the buying public is aware of the various tactics that might exist with some of the gold and bullion dealers. Most of them are honest. Most of the people in this business are good people. They're in it for the right reason, and they're not overcharging. But there are some people out there that are taking advantage of people that are charging too much. And generally, those are the companies that do all the advertising. After all, advertising is expensive. If you're running commercials all the time on CNN, on CNBC, and Fox, if your ads are all over the place, those ads cost a lot of money. And the only way to get back the money from the ads is to overcharge for your coins. But the thing is, in this day and age, with the internet, with all this information, it's amazing to me that so many people would overpay when all they got to do is spend 5 or 10 minutes on the internet, and they'll figure out where they can get the best deal. You know, buying gold is simple. Gold is gold. Silver is silver. If you want to buy it, just find out where you can buy it inexpensively from someone that you can trust. That's all it is. It's not like, you know, buying stocks where you got so many different stocks to choose from, where you got to do all your research. You got to figure out, is it a good company? How safe is the dividend? How long have they been in business? You don't need all the help, right? That's what I'm trying to do. You just need somebody not to rip you off, somebody to give you gold and silver at a fair price so that you can make money if it goes up. And if it goes down and you want to sell, you're not going to take a beating. Anyway, thanks for your call.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, the next caller is Peter calling from Connecticut. How you doing, Peter?
I'm doing great. I had two hopefully quick questions. One, I keep hearing all the time what a cataclysm it would be if the banks were allowed to fail, the big banks. I just don't understand, you know, what would have happened if the banks would have been allowed to fail. And no one ever goes into it other than just saying, oh, my God, well, we wouldn't want that to have happened.
Yeah, I think it would have been better to let some of these big banks fail. Now, the question would have been, what would the government have done about the deposits? Now, we could have just bailed out all the depositors, right, and made sure that nobody lost. That would have been a better bailout, in my opinion, than the way we did it. So if we let the banks fail and then bailed out all the depositors, you know, it would have been the banks that would have lost and their creditors, but the depositors. But I don't want to bail out all the depositors. Maybe we could bail out the small depositors that were insured by the FDIC, but let's let the bigger depositors take a loss, you know, because maybe they'll be a little bit more concerned next time about which banks they put their money in. I mean, when FDIC insurance was first introduced, it was only for a small amount of money. The idea was that the little guy, well, he doesn't know where to put his money, so let's just insure his deposit. But the rich people, well, they're smart enough to figure out which are the good banks and which are the bad banks. So, you know, we need to have the depositor, you know, concerned about the banks so that they don't just put money in any bank. And the bankers need to know that the depositors are concerned so they don't take all these crazy risks and all the speculation. Look, it certainly would have been the short run of banks failing and people losing money. Yes, that would have been bad. But what we've done in the long run is even worse. But the politicians never want to bite the bullet, admit there's a problem, and deal with it. What they want to do is deny there's a problem, find some way to postpone the consequences, even if their actions make it worse in the long run. And that's exactly what they did.
One more quick one. China seems to be buying a lot of its internal gold production, but why haven't they been more active buying gold outside of the Chinese mainland?
Well, I mean, my only guess is they don't want to push the price up too much. I mean, they're trying to support the dollar, and a surge in the price of gold would undermine the dollar. But, you know, it's my, you know, thinking that they will eventually up their purchases. I mean, what I think the smartest thing for China to do would not be to buy physical gold, but to buy stock in gold mining companies. And I'm not saying that because I own these companies. I own these companies because I think that is what's going to happen. I think that, you know, it makes a lot of sense for China to go and buy a major gold producer because they're buying all the gold that's in the ground, not the gold that's above ground. By buying a gold stock, they don't push up the value of those reserves, I mean, the price of those reserves. And what China could do is simply take all the production. Let's say China buys a major mining company that normally sells gold into the market. They buy that company and they say, you know what, we're not going to sell any of the gold. The gold is just going to be mined and put in our vaults. And if they were to do that with a couple of mining companies, not only would they now solve their problems with their dollars, you know, the gold price would skyrocket because now there'd be no more gold being supplied by the mining industry. Now, of course, if China did do that, there's always a chance that the country where those mines are located might decide to seize the mines and steal them out from under the Chinese by nationalizing them. So, you know, it's who knows what's going to happen.
Right. Okay, thanks so much. Yeah.
All right, well, thanks for the call. But either way, I expect the price of gold to rise. I mean, that's another reason that I'm getting into the gold business, although I have been in the gold business since 2001 selling a Perth Mint. And I've been doing that, you know, for years and years, and we've been charging our clients a 2% markup, although recently, because of the increased regulation on the model states, and there's 21 states that are in the model states, and so I've recently increased my commission to people that live in those model states to 2.75%, just because the compliance costs were so much higher. And we're the only company, by the way, that where if you want to buy Perth Mint and you live in a model state, your Pacific Capital is the only place in the world that you can buy that. And it's because of all the extra compliance that other firms are just not able to shoulder. We're doing it, but, you know, the costs were going up, and so I had to raise my prices. And that, you know, that's another reason. If this Wiener investigation of Goldline results in Congress, you know, regulating gold, I mean, they might want to try to claim gold as a security and get the SEC in there. If they do that, you know, then everybody who's selling gold at a fair price is going to have to raise the price. because it's going to be so much more expensive for gold companies to stay in business, complying with all these new rules and regulations, that they're going to have to raise prices for everybody. So all the people who haven't been getting overcharged are now going to have to suffer because a few people were being overcharged by a high-profile firm. That's always the problem. You know, a couple of bad apples spoil it for everybody else. And the net effect of the government regulation on the country as a whole is far more money is lost due to the added cost of compliance than is lost by the people who get taken in by the huckster. Hopefully, what I want to take down these bad practices by these companies is not congressional action, but the free market, information. That's what we need. Now, as I said before, if Goldline, and I don't know what they've done, so I'm not alleging it, but if they have actually committed fraud, if they are deceiving people through fraud, if they are inducing them to do things fraudulently, well, that's already a crime. We don't need any new rules and regulations for the government to go after fraud. They could just go after what's already on the books, and I agree that fraud should be illegal. Right? That is one area where I do think that we should have government, and that is to enforce laws and to protect us from criminal acts that other citizens might perpetrate on us, and that includes fraud. Anyway, next up is Zach in Illinois. Go ahead, Zach.
Yeah. Hi, Peter.
Hi, how are you?
Nice to talk to you.
Thank you.
I'm great. So I'm a brand new Europac customer, and I've also donated several times to your campaign. So I'm betting big on you, and keep up the good work.
Appreciate it. Thanks for the confidence.
Sure. And it's very entertaining, watching all your campaign appearances on YouTube. So really enjoying that. So my question is, I've heard you predict several times that, as the career politicians screw this country up, Americans are going to start leaving for Asia where all the economic growth is. In fact, I've actually started a service, PathToAsia.com, to help Americans, make the move over there. So what I'm wondering is, do you think there'll be a sort of a single seminal event? You mentioned earlier the 401k seizures, like a stock market crash, civil unrest, something like that, that will cause the flow of Americans moving to Asia to turn into a massive rush?
I mean, it's already happening. I mean, and the people who are making the move first are the people that already have ties there, which are children of Asian immigrants, where they already have they know the culture, they might speak the language, they have relatives that are still living over there. And so those are the people who are moving first. But once they get over there and they start keeping in touch with some of their American friends, if they start finding jobs, if they start starting businesses, and the American friends who they're communicating with on the internet are having a tough time, they might start to move over. As you know people over there, you're more interested in going there. It's easier to make the move if you have some friends, and so it's all going to build, this is how people came to America. One person came, then their brother came, their sister came, their aunts and uncles. America, we started building up, these communities where the Irish immigrants were, the Jewish immigrants were in one area, the Germans were in another area, the Italians were in another area. And as people started to come over, and so this could start to happen. I mean, you could start having, American villages, ghetto areas, whatever you want to call them, grow in certain parts of Shanghai, certain parts of Beijing. I mean, all of this is going to happen if we don't take action, if we don't stop, repelling people out of the country. We're going to choke off opportunity. We're going to choke off entrepreneurship if we keep raising taxes, borrowing money, printing money, writing new rules and regulations. This economy is going to go nowhere. There is going to be no opportunity here. The opportunities are going to be abroad, and people are going to leave. That's why I keep telling people when I'm campaigning, our children are not going to pay these debts. They're not going to stay here. We are doing this to ourselves. We are destroying the country for us, and we're forcing our children to make a decision between, leaving or staying here. And, I think that the smartest ones will leave, and I think it's unfortunate. I think it's a terrible thing that we're doing, and I don't want to see this country disintegrate like that. But it's going to happen before our eyes. It's going to happen in my lifetime if, we don't do something about it. And I'm trying to do whatever I can,
Well, I appreciate your efforts, Peter, but, I think, and this is kind of a rhetorical question, but, why keep struggling and toiling here in America against this kind of a rigged system, it seems? you know, why not just pick up and move to Asia now if you can?
Yeah, I know. You know, people ask myself that. Other people have done it. Jimmy Rogers have done it. But as I said, you know, I'd like to try. I'd like to say that it isn't a lost cause, that we shouldn't write America off. That the country is worth fighting for. You know, and so let's try to fight for it as long as we can. But I don't blame the people who are leaving. You know, who can read the writing on the walls, and I hope I don't regret my decision to hang out here. You know, but I'm going to stay as long as I can and try to do what I can. Sure. But anyway, thanks a lot for the call.
Peter. Thanks a lot.
I'll try to get to these last three callers or two callers. So let's have nobody else calling up because I know we only have 10 minutes. Let's go to Chris, who's been patiently holding on from New Jersey. Go ahead, Chris.
Hey, Peter. How's it going?
Good, how are you?
The commercials on CNBC where they sell you their gold. If you actually back out the math, that guy that sells the gold coins, it comes out to $18,000 an ounce.
There are bigger scams out there than Gold Line. I mean, if you buy, there are commercials for these coins, these proof sets, and they masquerade. They act like they're selling you gold. But, I mean, you know, there's like, you know, gold is like 1/20th of the price that you're paying. You're getting like a speck of gold. They just like paint the gold on there. So, yeah, you got to be careful on these TV commercials, you know, when they say limit, you know, you can only buy, you know, 100 coins per person, a strict limit, you know, like a strict limit of 100. That's not a lot of coins. But, yeah, I said, look, there's a bull market in gold. Gold's going up. And so, you know, you're going to get a lot of these, you know, people trying to take advantage of the fact that so many people don't know anything about gold. You got all these novices coming into the market for the first time, and they don't know any better. And so what we got to do is we got to make sure, that people understand there's a right way and there's a wrong way to buy gold. And if people buy it the right way, you know, if gold goes up, they're gonna succeed. And if gold goes down, they'll lose, but they're not gonna get destroyed. I mean, you buy some of these coins, you know, you buy a coin at Gold Line where they mark it up 50-60%. If gold goes down 20%, you try to sell. I mean, there's nothing left, right? I mean, you're down 80% of your money's gone.
Their deal isn't good at all. So good to have some.
And as I said on my blogs, I don't, I'm giving Glenn Beck the benefit of the doubt until I know otherwise. You know, I think he sincerely believes that people should buy gold, and you know, I just don't think he really understood the industry that well, and I just don't think he did as much due diligence as he should have. You know, he said he went down there at Gold Line and looked him in the eye. I think he should have done a lot more than just look him in the eye, because not everybody who looks you in the eye is being honest. And so I think they've taken advantage of his name and his endorsement, and I really would like to see him state that publicly and come out against this company, because I think the more he defends them, the more he makes Wiener's case, and I think ultimately it's going to backfire on him. All right, I guess Chris is gone.
Hello?
Oh, okay.
I guess, and I'll try and make my question quick. I know you're short, but what I've been wondering about is really, you know, if you own a fixed-rate mortgage, and, I mean, I completely agree with all the reasons that we're just going to go crazy with the inflation here, I mean, and won't see much change in that behavior unless, you know, again, I hope people realize how important it is what you're doing, because...
Yeah, I mean, look, if you've got a fixed rate mortgage that's really low, I mean, you can stay in that house and keep making the payments. Eventually, inflation will take care of it. But, you know, I read an article today, you know, the average person who stops making his mortgage payment, it's taken a year and a half before they get foreclosed on. And, you know, that's a year and a half of rent-free living, property tax-free, you know, mortgage-free. People are using a lot of that cash to get back on their feet. So depending on, you know, if your house is worth a lot less than your mortgage, you know, that might not be the best thing to do. I mean, you might be better off giving your house back to the bank if you still have equity, right? If you have a $300,000 mortgage on a house that's worth $400,000, and if you have a low 30-year fixed rate mortgage, then it probably does make a lot of sense to make the payments and stay in the house. But for some people, where you have a $400,000 mortgage on a $200,000 house, even the low payments, you know, financially, it might not make sense to make them when, you know, you can make no payment. That's a decision people are making. I mean, you could forget about the moral aspects of it. Although, you know, a lot of times when people buy a house, they agree that either to either pay back the money or give the lender the house. I mean, that's your choice. You can say, you know what, I'm going to give you the house instead of the money. I mean, that's part of what a lot of these mortgages are. And the government made it easier. The government changed the tax laws. The government said, if you don't pay your mortgage, then we're going to forgive your taxes on the debt that's forgiven. So the government has made it very easy for people to walk away from their mortgage, and a lot of people are doing it. I mean, and more people are going to do that, which is just why the real estate prices are going to be under so much pressure in the future.
Well, if I have equity now, my question is that I'm thinking I want to sell before, the second bubble comes here, because, in terms of real prices, I think housing is...
Yeah, it all depends on what you're going to do with the money. What can you rent? What are you going to buy with the proceeds, gold, foreign stocks? It's too long a conversation to really get into in the next 4.5 minutes, but maybe try calling next week or talk to a broker. I want to quickly take the last call. Let me go to Jerry from Washington. Go ahead, Jerry.
Hello?
Hi, Jerry. You're on the air. We just got about 4 minutes. Oh. What's your question?
Hi, how are you, Peter? I read your book, and I like your book. And
thank you.
And especially the part that you describe how China supports the U.S. economy by sacrificing all the fish and in return of getting just those fish notes.
Yep.
So my question for you.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yes, ask your question, please.
Oh, okay. So my question to you is, from 1980 to, I would say, about year 2000, we have the economy is growing, but I think there was some inflation. And at that time, it seems like for some reason our wage keep up the inflation. And I just don't understand why from year 2000 to now, it seems like the average wage is not keeping up as fast as inflation happening.
Yeah, and in fact, it's even worse because the government is underestimating how much inflation really is. Now, the wages are what they are, but inflation is actually a lot worse than the government lets on. So real wages are actually falling even faster. And the reason that is happening is because the government is now and the economy is so much less efficient and productive with all these rules and regulations. And because we're not saving as much money, and because we're not saving, we don't have the tools for the capital investment that is necessary to make labor more productive. So the whole economy is disintegrating because of all the taxes, all the spending, all the regulations. And the result of that is that real wages are falling. If we want real wages to rise, we need a vibrant free market economy. We need to shrink government. We need to repeal rules and regulations. We need to lower taxes. And we need to restore sound money, which means higher interest rates that encourage savings and promote investment. Low interest rates that promote gambling and speculation, which is what we got now.
So at least from my understanding is like from 1980 to year 2000, why do we have, I think the tax at that period is higher than the income tax that we are paying from year 2000 to when George Bush was the president at that time. So why do we have lower tax at that period of time, but wage seems to be not going up that fast?
I said because the economy, because we've been destroying a lot of the higher wage jobs, a lot of the manufacturing jobs, and we've been replacing them with lower paying, service sector jobs. And as the government's getting bigger and bigger, more and more money is being transferred there. The government deficits are bigger, so that's crowding out more private capital that would have been used to make workers more productive so that they can enjoy rising wages. It's all cumulative effect. The bigger the government gets, the weaker the economy gets. And the way you see that is in a lower standard of living, which is in a diminished real wages for American workers. And that is going to continue even if nominal wages ultimately start to rise because inflation is running so out of control. Anyway, Jerry, thank you very much for the call. I'm glad
you
enjoyed my book. Let me let you go because I know we're starting to be running out of time here. Anyway, thanks, everybody, for tuning in for another live episode of Wall Street Unspun. Don't forget to call us up at 800-727-7922, 800-727-7922 to learn about buying foreign stocks and bonds at Euro Pacific Capital. Also, if you're interested in the Perth Mint. Be sure to ask your broker about buying Perth Mint certificates, and be on the lookout for Euro Pacific precious metals coming within the next couple of weeks. And as I said earlier, don't forget, you got to get a copy of the newest book, How an Economy Grows and Why It Crashes. Great book to give away to your friends. Good graduation gift, Father's Day present. And, of course, don't forget Crash Proof 2.0, How to Profit from the Economic Collapse. That book's a must-read as well. Anyway, take care, everybody. Have a great night again. This is Peter Schiff signing off from Euro Pacific, Wall Street Unspun. Good night, everyone.